Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast, the official podcast for the official booster club of the Seattle Seahawks. That was just the 12 train with their anthem, Seahawks. So thanks to Chris Johnson, a.k.a. Weehawk, for letting us bump in with that music. I'm Brandon Schultz, member of the Military Seahawkers chapter, and my co-host here sitting next to me is Adam Emmert.
How's it going, man?
It's going great. Ready to kick off this inaugural Seahawkers podcast.
Oh, I can't wait for this, man. I've been looking forward to this for a while. And I mean, we are official. I mean, you said that in the beginning.
Doubly official.
Double official. I feel very official. So I'm ready for this.
All right. Well, let's get to it. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today. We want to talk about the high expectations for the Seahawks this season. Lots of things to talk about that we've gone over in the offseason. We want to talk about the QB battle brewing between Tavarius Jackson and Brady Quinn. We'll get to see a little bit about that in the preseason game coming up.
You call it a battle, I call it a foregone conclusion, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. I could go with that too.
Yeah.
Want to take a look at some of the other things we're looking at in preseason. Also have a really great interview coming up with Bruce Bright, who is the Seahawkers Central Council president. He's kind of responsible for giving us the go-ahead to have this duly official podcast.
And a fan for as long as you can be a fan of the Seahawks, as official as it gets.
That's right. Also, we want to have a little bit of fun. We want to talk about the NFC worst coming up. Stick around for that. Jim Harbaugh's had an epic offseason. We want to take a look at some of the stuff he's got to do after losing the Super Bowl.
And those are going to be two different things, right? The NFC worst and Jim Harbaugh? Because, well, I was pretty sure those were synonymous.
You could include those, but I think there's something even a little bit worse than Jim Harbaugh that's happened recently that we want to talk about.
Agreed.
And, of course, we want to finish off with who is better at life than Skip Bayless, which...
Well, that's a low bar, but we have some ideas for that.
You might not be able to fit Riley Cooper into that category, but at this moment, but
6 of 1, half does the other.
That's true.
Yeah.
But so let's go ahead and get started about talking about some of these high expectations of the team this year. What have you noticed, Adam, this offseason?
Well, obviously, there's a lot of hype around the team, and it's warranted. I mean, this is one of the best years, you know, or best offseasons we've had going in. You know, you've seen the team grow over the last year, you know, finishing 11-5 last year and losing the way they did in Atlanta. They were so close to that NFC Championship game, and I know if we would have gotten there, we'd have beaten down the 49ers.
Right.
There's no doubt in my mind.
You know, we would have.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, 42-13 proves that to me, you know, like the last time we actually had played. But, you know, it does feel a little odd as a Seahawks fan to have high expectations, especially these last couple years. You know, it's been since maybe, you know, 5-06 since we've had those high expectations.
Yeah, seeing the Seahawks there, number one in the offseason polling for just
ESPN power rankings.
Yeah, and, yeah. Not that I ever put a whole lot of stock into power rankings, but it's just...
That's not a guarantee?
Well, I don't think it has been in the past. Could you tell me who's been number one in the power rankings the last 3 years and if they made it to the Super Bowl or not?
No.
No.
Sorry.
Nobody
that.
Pays attention to that.
No, that's true. But, you know, the high expectations that come with the team, a lot of people I know have been out there, have been saying, well, can this team handle it? I mean, they're a young team. Is this something that they're going to be able to deal with? And I think they're going to deal with it really well, to quote Pete Carroll. You know, because Pete Carroll, he's dealt with success when he was at USC, you know, for all those years. He was on top year after year after year. And I think that's where he really learned as a coach how to deal with success and how to allow his players to deal with success. And you can see it in the way that, you know, he talks to the players and the way they speak about this season. They're really embracing the challenge. They're not running away from it. They're not backing down. They're taking it full on and in stride. You know,
right.
The way I see it.
And I think that's one of the things that Carroll has actually said is that he wants the players to embrace the expectations that people, you know, well, not only Seattle fans, but you know, the expectations from the media. And I think they would say that they have those expectations for themselves, and that, you know, nobody has higher expectations for what they want to do than the actual people on the team.
Well, absolutely, especially Russell Wilson. I mean, this is a guy that has the highest expectations out of anybody on this planet, I would imagine. And if there was anybody that was wired well to actually deal with expectations, it's Russell Wilson. This guy, he doesn't get too high about anything. He doesn't get too low about anything. I'm pretty sure most of his conversations at the dinner table with Ashton are pretty monotone, like, you know, robot responses. Well,
when you say wired for it, you mean wired literally.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he came preloaded with expectations 1.0 software.
Right, yeah, which goes back to John Moffitt and some of the Real Rob reports
yeah,
and
exactly.
calling Russell Wilson a robot.
Yeah, and having Tiger Woods color skin paint, right. You know, in his locker. So, yeah. But, you know, when you have the leader of your team, you know, and the quarterback is, you know, almost always the leader of your team, as a guy who is even keeled and knows how to prepare each week, whether you have low expectations or high expectations, he's going to prepare the same way. I don't have any worries about it, because you take your cues from that leader. And between him or even Earl on defense, for an example, I mean, he's the leader on the defensive end, in my opinion. I mean, a lot of people might say Red Bryant, but, you know, you hear Russell and Earl or hear about Russell and Earl talking a lot during the offseason about, you know, how they're going to prepare for this year and, you know, how to make sure that their family is ready for this. And, you know, they look at this as a family, you know, and they're a tight-knit group, and I don't think that there's going to be much that's going to get them off track and going to derail their focus. I feel good about it.
So one of the things that we haven't even talked about yet that goes along with the expectations, well, some of the part of what prompted the expectations was the trade for Percy Harvin, trading the first-round draft pick, getting Percy Harvin on the team. Once that happened, that was really where expectations started to take off.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you bring in a guy that's was maybe an MVP candidate towards, you know, the middle of the season last year before he went down with the ankle injury, you know, that raises expectations even higher. And, you know, you know, they bring in Percy Harvin, and the expectations go through the roof. But now with losing him, the expectations haven't gone down at all.
No, I don't think so. Well, definitely not for Seahawks fans, definitely not for the team. I think you start to see some of the worry among some Seahawks fans. When that happened, there was everything had gone so well in the offseason.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you know, here's kind of a devastating injury, and the realization that, okay, this season's not going to go perfectly.
Sure. Well, I mean, show me a Super Bowl champion that hasn't dealt with adversity at some point during their season. And, you know, it's one of those things that galvanizes a group and makes them, you know, even stronger and more of a tight-knit group. And if, considering that we played all last year without Percy, and, you know, we have the same guys out there that finished 11-5 last year and were on the steps of the NFC Championship game, on the footstep of the NFC Championship game, I'm not worried at all about any of that. I think they're going to be just fine.
Yeah. I think just those first six games last year of the season, when Russell was just starting to, well, they hadn't taken the training wheels off of him yet. And we look at that team, I mean, we're going to be immensely better for those first six games with Russell Wilson having had the experience that he did last year and that same core. So, yeah, I'm not really worried about not having Harvin.
No, not at all. I mean, yeah, those first six games were a little rough offensively, you know, and when you look back on it. But like you said, he had the training wheels on. But I just recently went back and watched a couple of games, you know, including the first game against Arizona. And you compare that to where Russell was at the end of the year, and it's a different quarterback. I mean, he was used to the speed of the game at that point, you know, had seen how many different defensive looks. And a guy that studies like he does, like, I mean, he must have photographic memory because, I mean, he recalls every single one of those defensive fronts. And now that he's, you know, seen all of those, he's going to be much better, just like he was for the last, you know, 8 to 10 games of the season. So, yeah, I mean, the team is going to start out a lot stronger offensively this year. Which obviously would be a big help. And, you know, maybe you don't lose a game like the Miami game last year.
Or the Arizona game, because we don't have Braylon Edwards to drop the football.
Exactly. Exactly. Although you got to give Braylon a little credit. He did catch that back shoulder fade in the New England game.
Yeah,
that was
just
pretty impressive.
It just hit him in the hands, you know, for the Arizona game.
But yeah, minor detail. Yeah, you might catch these game winners, you know.
Yeah.
It's nice.
They're important.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, as far as the high expectations goes, that's pretty much all I had to say about that. I mean, I think it's something that, you know, every successful team deals with. You know, you look at the New England Patriots, they've been under that pressure, you know, quote unquote, for years, and they don't seem to crumple, you know, when that's placed upon them. I don't see this team having those sort of issues with those expectations.
Yeah, I hope not. And, you know, some older Seahawks fans might remember, you know, past seasons where coming out of their 12-4 season in 1984, coming into that 85 season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huge expectations.
Right.
And that team went 8-8. So
true.
I think there's some Seahawks fans that may have reservations just because of that history.
I could see that. I mean, I can understand having the reservations. Now, one thing that I would say is if they do finish 10-6 but still get into the playoffs, that's not a failed season to me. And that's not you're still meeting expectations at that point, as long as you're in the playoffs and you have an opportunity to make a run in the playoffs. Obviously, if we have a better record and we have more home games, that would be ideal. But you just need to get in. And once you're in, You can win the whole enchilada.
Look at
the Ravens last year. I mean, they went through murderer's row, basically, you know, and on the road pretty much the entire time. I think you just need to get in. You know, I'm not too worried about the exact record when it's all said and done by the end of the year. But what I am worried about is a ring, and it's time. I'm ready.
Well, the Hawks have shown that they can win on the road, and that was one of the things that we haven't necessarily seen in the past. But when they went into and played the Redskins and won that game, and then when they almost beat the Falcons,
right,
it showed that this team is a team that can win on the road.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there was no doubt in my mind. I mean, they were showing that they could win on the road even before that. I mean, back in the Bears game when they won the game twice.
Right.
You know? They're a team that can, well, when you have that style of play of stout defense, you know, a strong running game and a quarterback that can make those chunk plays or gap plays that Russell Wilson calls them, you know, that's a type of team that is the formula to win on the road. And I mean, you saw it as the year progressed. I mean, we definitely had that ability. So yeah, I think home or away, we're going to be just fine this year.
So let's move on. Let's transition from talking about one quarterback to a couple of other quarterbacks. Mm. Let's talk some T-Jack and Brady Quinn. And
yeah,
you mentioned in the intro this might be a foregone conclusion in your mind, but tell us how you see this going in training camp between Tavares Jackson and Brady Quinn. And also, one other thing that I want to talk about, when it was first announced he was coming back to Seattle, it was almost as if there was a collective no from a pretty good-sized group of fans that, you know, here they saw the Tavares Jackson that was with the team in 2011 and led the team to a losing record, you know, the second 7-9 season under Pete Carroll. And, you know, here he is coming back to Seattle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people had a problem with that, and they freaked out a little bit. I actually had the opposite reaction when I saw the T-Jack signing, because I look at T-Jack and I see an upper-tier backup quarterback. He's a guy that can get you 8-8 in a season. That team that he was playing on in 2011, that offensive line was pretty rough. I mean,
especially through the first 6-7 games of the season,
it was
brutal.
Brutal. And by that time, you know, he had the torn pec. And you try throwing a football with the torn pec, man. Like, I can barely throw a football 20 yards, you know, completely healthy. And this guy, you know, he was gutting through a significant injury, an injury that keeps most guys out. So what I want out of my backup, when I look at my backup quarterback, is I want a guy that can come in and at least get me 500 for 3-4 games, and that even if he gets a little dinged up, he can still gut through an injury. And because he got through that, or, you know, had that kind of gut check through the season and made it through that injury, he won over that locker room. He's highly popular in the Seahawks locker room and with all the other players. A really respected guy. And I think that's something that goes a long, long ways. Not to say that Brady Quinn's a bad guy or people don't like him or anything like that, but I think that's an element that is important. And especially when you show the team, hey, maybe we let you go, but, you know, we told you we really like you, but, you know, we just didn't have a roster spot for you that year. If there's a roster spot the next year, we'll bring you back, you know. And I think that's an important message to send. You know, it is family to a degree.
I had the same reaction. I really liked the move when I found out he was coming back, because it wasn't as if he was coming back to take Wilson's job. I mean, Wilson is solidified as the starter, so we know he's just coming in to be a backup. Is he going to be a better backup than Matt Flynn? Well, I guess we'll find out this year when he starts for the Raiders.
He's a cheaper backup than Matt Flynn.
He's a heck of a lot cheaper, and I think he's going to be a lot better than... We aren't going to see, if he does make it to the field, we're going to see a lot different T-Jack, because he's going to have the running game, he's going to have a better offensive line, and I don't think the team is going to have him in those positions where he's going to throw those interceptions, where he had a lot of pressure on him to make those throws in big situations where they were down by points.
Well, and that's the difference between a backup quarterback and an elite-level quarterback. A backup quarterback, a good backup quarterback, will get you 8-8, but he's not going to win you a game when you're down four with, you know, 2 minutes left and you need a game-winning drive and a 30-yard touchdown bomb. Like, that's not what an elite or good backup does. The elite players, and that's what separates Russell Wilson from, say, a T-Jack or any of the, you know, kind of middle-of-the-pack quarterbacks, is when it comes down to it, when it's clutch time, he gets it done. I mean, he's got clutch written all over him. So no, you don't bring in T-Jack to go in and like win you three games because you screwed the whole game up and hey, now T-Jack, take us home, baby. No, that's not you bring him in there to be precisely a game manager. And it's a term that a lot of people hate, but that's exactly what you're bringing him in for. Not to say that Brady Quinn can't do it, but when I look at their two careers, you know, over, you know, the last few years, T-Jack has a QB rating of 77.7 for his career, has thrown 38 touchdowns and 35 interceptions. Now, Brady Quinn, he has a QB rating of 64.4. He's thrown 12 touchdown passes in his career with 17 picks. Now, I don't base everything, you know, on football on stats, but when stats back up what the eye test shows me, that's when I know that I'm seeing what's actually going on the field. And you looked at Brady Quinn at the end of the year with Kansas City, and that looked like a guy who's just scared behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and with Kansas City, he had guys like Dwayne Bowe to throw to. He had Jamal Charles to hand the ball off to. He had good players around him.
Yeah, supposedly. I think some of that Kansas City talent's a little overrated. But yeah, but they are decent players. I know what you mean by that. Yeah.
And so, yeah, when I look at Brady Quinn, I've looked at his past seasons too. One time he's thrown for more than 300 yards. And I think Tavares, he threw for over 300 yards multiple times, even with the torn pec.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. And then just watching a little bit of training camp, to me, I mean, and I'm not, you know, quarterback experts or anything like that, but just looking at the way the guys are throwing the ball, Tavares throws it with more authority. He's just looked better overall, too. So to me, I think this is an easy call. I'm pretty sure that it's going to just end up being Russell and Tavares when it's all said and done. And somebody on the practice squad, whoever that may be, maybe they bring back a Jerron Johnson. I don't know. They're definitely not bringing back Josh Portis, but,
we got Mike Robb, emergency situation warrants.
Yeah. Heck, I almost would put Sidney back there before Mike Robb. He can throw a decent deep ball.
As long as it's not Golden throwing the ball.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Lefties are kind of funny to watch anyways when they're tossing the ball around. And boy, that guy, he's got an awkward delivery, to say the least.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing it again, you know, if it were for a touchdown. But sure. Yeah. So let's go on and talk a little bit about preseason this year.
Yeah.
A lot of interesting rookies picked up in the draft. A lot of guys on the depth chart, you know, trying to work through that.
Yeah.
A lot of depth in the secondary, which will be fun to watch. Any matchups that you're watching through the preseason?
Well, there's a few position groups that I'm going to keep my eye on. Number one is defensive tackle. I know, you know, personally, when we've talked, you know, off the show, we've talked a lot about the two rookies that have come in, whether that be Jesse Williams or Jordan Hill.
And you know, I love Jesse Williams.
You love Jesse Williams. But and honestly, you know, he, by all accounts, he looked really good in the mock game earlier. It was the best that he's looked. He had tweaked his knee earlier in camp, but seems to be okay. So that's good to hear, because that's the knee that everybody had concerns about coming out of the draft. But the guy that I'm really big on is Jordan Hill. Not because he's a run stuffer. I mean, he's slightly undersized for a D lineman, but the guy's got the quickest lateral step I've seen on a D lineman since Warren Sapp. I mean, this guy, he just gets around and gets into a gap really quickly. And so I think he could fit in really well for our nickel pass rush. And I think that's going to be the biggest difference in for us getting off the field on those third and longs, because that was the Achilles heel of this defense last year, is third and long. I don't know how many times we ended up in third and 11, third and 12, you know, on defense. And I turned to one of my buddies and just shake my head and be like, we're giving this up, because you just knew it was going to happen. It happened time and time and
time
again.
It happened in the Bears game. I think we had a third and long in that situation, and in the Falcons game. So I mean, those were two huge games. Huge. Fortunately, we were able to come back in the Bears game.
Yeah.
But you know, you can't keep giving up those third and longs.
Oh, it was just brutal. So if we could manufacture a little more pass rush up the middle, that'd be fantastic. Whether that be Jordan Hill or, say, even Tony McDaniel, that'd be another guy that I'd watch here in the preseason games, just to see, you know, how they're going to use each of these guys and just to see what kind of skill sets they bring to the field. But if we could get some pass rush up the middle, it'd make all the difference in the world, because I love our edge rushers. You know, once Clem is back and healthy, and even Bruce Irvin, I think those guys, those speed rushers, you get them coming off the edge and you're collapsing the pocket from the middle. Good night, opposing quarterbacks.
Well, that was one of the things that the Seahawks really focused on in the offseason, and it might be more one of the more underrated things that they focused on with Percy Harvin taking a lot of the attention. But they went out, they got Michael Bennett, got Cliff Averill. And, you know, in addition to having mm-hmm. Bruce Irvin and Chris Clemens, yeah. And so having those guys to rush the passer, I think is going to, it's going to make it fun to watch the defense.
Oh, absolutely. It should increase our pass rush significantly, you know. And then, but they do say that Dan Quinn, our new defensive coordinator, is a little more aggressive than the past defensive coordinator, Gus Bradley. So we may even see a little more blitzing, you know, things along those lines as well, just to get that added pressure on the quarterback, because our corners and our safeties, we can hold up in coverage man-to-man, you know, if you go one-on-one. So that allows you to take a few more risks and blitz, you know, say an extra linebacker or something like that.
Well, it's that kind of aggressiveness that has me excited to watch the defense this year, because there were those situations where you wonder if maybe if in the Atlanta game we had put a little bit more pressure on the offense in those in that last minute, if things wouldn't have turned out a little bit differently.
Well, in Gus Bradley's defense, we did bring a blitzer on the two completions. They just got picked up, you know, and that's a risk that you take when you blitz. It's a gamble. I mean, and that's just it's the way she breaks sometimes, you know. You know, even a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while. So Matt Ryan might win a playoff game here and there, you know. it's just tough. But, you know, you'd mentioned the cornerbacks a little earlier. How do you see that position group shaking out?
Well, you know, obviously it's set with Sherman, Browner, and mm-hmm. Antoine Winfield. But, you know, a lot of those young guys, you know, that came in toward the end of the season last year, you know, to fill in when Browner was out, you know, it's going to be hard, I think, for some of the younger guys that are coming in to take over and show that they have more than what those guys learned behind Sherman and Browner last season.
Sure.
But I just think that the amount of depth that they have at that position, it's something that we haven't seen on a Seahawks team in, I don't know, ever.
Oh, absolutely. Let alone overall depth of the team, but especially at the corners.
In
the defensive backfield.
Right.
You know, the guy that we hadn't mentioned at this point is Walter Thurman. I truly believe this guy is a starting quality
corner. Well, he was the starter when Richard Sherman took over when he was injured.
Absolutely. I think he's a better cover player than Brandon Browner is. Is he going to be a stout and run defense and, you know, have old man strength and, like, you know, rip balls out of people's hands? You know, no, he's not that guy. He's not going to knock Wes Welker unconscious. But, you know, I think Thurman is a really quality player, if healthy. And
say that about him every year.
Yeah, and that's the hardest thing to bank on. You know, some people have even called into question whether Antoine Winfield is going to have a hard time making this roster. I personally don't see that. I think he's the exact guy I want as my nickel corner, because, you know, in the nickel, I mean, they're almost a de facto linebacker too, if it does happen to be a run play, you know, even if they come out with three wides or something along those lines. And he is amazing against the run. I think he was one of the highest rated corners according to Pro Football Focus, you know, against
right.
the run.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a place that we struggled last year, was nickel corner. I mean, bless Marcus Trufant's heart.
Hey,
I mean,
we all love Marcus Trufant.
You better love Marcus, but it was done. You know, I mean, he just couldn't keep up anymore. I mean, he just couldn't move like he used to. And I think Antoine Winfield is an upgrade at that position. Either him or Walter Thurman, whoever ends up taking those reps, I think we won't get nickeled and dimed by a slot receiver nearly as much as we did last year.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And so the other, I want to talk about the other side of the ball too, because a guy that I'm really interested in watching is Christian Michael.
Oh, yeah.
And he has been, I think, one of the most talked about rookies in this offseason. A lot of NFL guys are looking at him and saying, this is the guy to watch as one of the top future running backs. And it's really exciting that we got a guy of his caliber as late as we did in the draft.
Oh, he's electric. And I think the only reason we got him so late in the draft is just because he butted heads with his coaches back at Texas A&M for his last year. The year before that, he was very productive when he was still playing for Mike Sherman, the former Packers coach. His speed is off the charts. He's got a different gear than any of the backs that we have on the team right now.
But he has some of that toughness that you see in Marshawn too.
He runs hard. He runs very physically. But with that said, I still think that he's going to be our third back when it's all said and down or all said and done. I really think if Turbo is okay, Robert Turbin, if his foot heals up, I think he's going to be our number two back. I love Robert Turbin. I really do. Everything I saw out of him last year was really great, except for that one drop in the Niners game.
Yep.
But otherwise, he has reliable hands. He is remarkably quick. He made some big plays in that Atlanta game as well. Coming into his second year, I could see a big jump, you know, for him as well. And then obviously he's going to be a little better in pass protection than Christian Michael is at this point, just because of experience.
Sure.
But, what I love about the Christian Michael pick is not for this year or not even necessarily for next year, but maybe like 3 years from now,
right,
when Marshawn is starting to wind down, because I mean, his running style, he's going to break down. We'll have a guy that has elite level talent ready to go. And that's a huge deal.
Well, and that's just with Pete Carroll building this team as a run first team, it's important to have that depth and to see that depth being built. That's one of the reasons. And some people looked at that pick in the second
surprised.
Round and yeah, there was surprise because here we are with all these other needs. You know, we have Marshawn, we have Robert Turbin, and here we are drafting a running back with our first pick. We're going offense.
Yeah.
Not offensive line.
Right.
But, you know.
Yeah. Offensive line or defensive line or even linebacker at that point.
Those
were
what we all thought.
Yeah. That's what everybody thought. And, you know, I was as floored as anybody with the Christian Michael pick. But, you know, that's what John Schneider does. I mean, how many times have you seen a John Schneider draft pick and scratched your head a little bit and been like, well, I don't know, he hits on everything, so I guess I'll trust him.
Yeah, no, you have to at this point. And,
yeah.
And you know, something somebody said was after you take a look at the draft and just who they picked up and the positions that they picked, if you were to look at that going into the draft and say, here's the list of players that they were able to draft, and not having any idea of what position they were taken in, you would look at that and go, that's an outstanding draft.
Oh, without question. I mean, and especially if you count Percy Harvin as a first-round pick within that, because
well,
I mean, it's
did.
Your de facto, yeah, it's your de facto first round pick. I was big on this draft because there is a lot of talent in it. Another guy on offense, you know, out of that draft that I'm interested to watch is Spencer Ware, the fullback out of LSU, mainly because Coach Carroll has a lot of amazing things to say about him. He really, you know, kind of gushes about this guy. One thing that was surprising to me is with the new depth chart.
Yeah, they actually had him third.
Had him third. I would look at him and say, he's going to move up to the second spot on that after the preseason. And the reason I think that is he, out of everybody in this, you know, draft class, both Schneider and Carroll have come out and said he's the most physical runner out of this draft, the most bruising guy. That's something that's not going to show up well in training camp when you're, you know, playing in shorts. I think
right.
That's something that's going to show up when the preseason games start and, you know, are actually hitting people. And so I would look for him to be a little more productive, you know, through the preseason games and end up being our second string fullback. Some people were saying that he might even take Mike Robb's job, you know, right after he was drafted. I didn't see that at that time, and I really don't see it now because he needs to put on some weight. You know, he's a little smallish for a fullback at this point, but he'll get there.
Yeah, the only way I ever see that happening is if the Seahawks are looking to really save salary. But
absolutely,
I think at this point with, you know, Mike Robb being Pro Bowl caliber fullback, you got to keep him on the team.
I will say this: I think this is Mike Robb's last year on the team, and that bums me out to say
It would bum me out to if that were to happen.
Yeah, I love the Real Rob Report. I don't want to lose that.
No, you know. Me too.
Yeah, yeah. So anything else there in the preseason battles, position battles that you've been kind of looking at, or anything that you were kind of curious about?
No, the main thing is I want to see how they stack up against some of these opponents. And even though it is preseason, it is going to be interesting. You know, the Broncos take on the 49ers here this first week in preseason.
Yeah.
And then the Seahawks take on the Broncos in week two.
Right.
And so to kind of, I don't know if we're going to get enough to gauge some of those things. I mean, watching the Dolphins and Cowboys the other night was terrible. So I really hope that we don't get games like that to where we, can make absolutely no comparisons. But, seeing just how some of those teams match up together in comparison.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. One other thing that I was kind of hoping to look at was just Bruce Irvin and their experiment with putting him at the strong side linebacker.
Yeah. Yeah. Moving him off the line and to linebacker.
Some people think that's a bad idea, but he plays best in space. And so I think this is going to be a solid transition for him. And the way Coach Carroll talks about it, too, is that this isn't like giving up on him as a pass rusher. They're looking to expand his role because they're still going to get him on the line and be, primarily a speed rusher, in those third and long situations. But they're also seeing if, in nickel situations or things like that, if he could play in space a little bit and cover a little bit. And he's got a lot of learning to do. But I'm interested to see how that goes in the preseason.
Well, and obviously this isn't a team that is, opposed to making drastic changes to somebody's position. I mean, they took
J.R. Red Bryant. Yeah.
Yeah. Red Bryant, he made the move, and then J.R. Sweezy made the move from defensive line in college to O-line.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be he's set up to be the starting right guard right now.
I hope not. I hope it's Moffitt.
Well, we'll see how it works out, but just to be in that position 1 year
right
after making that transition is amazing. And then another guy is Bradford, the linebacker who he's a middle linebacker right now. And he was a fullback at USC for Carroll.
Right.
And so to see him making the transition, he wanted to play linebacker at USC. And now to see him making the transition to the defensive side of the ball and being in that number two spot going into preseason, it's pretty neat to watch too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's a credit to this coaching staff that, specifically Tom Cable, when you're talking about Sweezy a little earlier, to take a defensive guy that just has an aggressive mentality and the physical tools to go along with it, but then just give him the knowledge to actually play the position. And, boy, you saw Sweezy, he took it up pretty well. I mean, honestly, for somebody that was a 7th-round draft pick that was, changing positions, I thought he played amazingly well, throughout the season. And, that's one of the things that really impresses me about this coaching staff is that they're imaginative and they're willing to take risks and put people where they think they can succeed, even if it's not traditionally what that player has done.
Right. So I think that's a good note to end on as we go through the podcast here. And next up, we want to talk to Bruce Bright, who is the president of the Seahawker Central Council. So right after the break, we'll talk to Bruce.
Now we have here on the phone Bruce Bright. He's the Seahawkers Central Council President. He's been in that position for 6 years. He's also the South Seahawkers President. I've been in that position for 10 years. A Seahawks fan since 1976, the year that the Seahawks came to Seattle. And been a member of the Seahawkers Club for the last 16 years, back in 1997. So good to have you on the phone, Bruce. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Brandon.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about the Seahawks. How long have you been a Seahawks fan?
Well, yeah, like you said, 1976. Big fan. I started as a season ticket holder, I would say 77. I went to the first game with my dad, and he was volunteering with the Kiwanis to sell hot dogs for a fundraiser for the Kiwanis. And he said, I was about 16, and he said, you want to come and help? And I'm sure. So it was a preseason game. I think we were playing the Dallas Cowboys. And then he said, oh, well, this looks like fun. Maybe I should check into getting tickets. So he got tickets for the 77 season, and we went around the stadium and sat at different locations in the King Dome during that season. And then, settled on a spot, section 128, row 40, and were there the whole time, in the King Dome. So started in 77 and still have season tickets. So
where are you sitting now?
Well, we're in section 335, row double B, and it's probably around the 45-50 yard line up in the third deck. So, yeah.
Excellent. And so tell us a little bit about the Seahawkers organization that you're president of.
Okay. Well, I'm the president of the Central Council, which is kind of the governing body of the Seahawks. There's like 26 other chapters, being a member of the military chapter, and there's 25 other chapters around the world, the UK, Canadian chapter, and there's Alaskan chapters, Midwest chapter, and a couple California chapters, and 7 local chapters. So, so I've been the president for the last 6 years of the Central Council.
Well, it's good to hear that there's a couple of Seahawks chapters down in 49ers country. That warms my heart a little bit, Bruce. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about what you do as president of the Central Council.
Okay. Well, I preside over the meetings. So we have a Central Council meeting each month, and we organize different events. The next event will be the kickoff party at King Street Bar and Oven down across the street from the stadium. That's going to be the Saturday before the first home game, which is August. Well, the kickoff party will be August 14th, Saturday. So, September 14th.
Right, the game before the day before the 49ers game.
Exactly. So that's the kickoff party. We have a barbecue we just had. Over 400 people at the BMAC, Seahawkers at the BMAC for a barbecue just a couple weeks ago. And then we also, at the end of April, we had our annual spring banquet. And so there's events that the Central Council puts on for all the, try to get as many of the people to come out for these events, or the Seahawkers from around the country, to come to these events. So.
And tell us a little bit about how, when you guys have those events, like the barbecue, obviously you're there at the BMAC, so there's plenty of folks from the Seahawks organization there, but also when you do the annual banquet, what kind of support do you get from the team? Do we get players showing up and that kind of thing? For kind of explain it for some of the folks that may not have been to those events in the past.
Yeah, Doug Baldwin was able to be there this year, and he was really interesting, great speaker. A couple other Seahawks. In past years, we've had more participation by the Seahawks players. It just depends, when it is and if they can make it. Richard Sherman's mom was there to accept an award for him, so that was nice.
So I have a question there, Bruce. Does Richard Sherman's mom talk as much as Richard Sherman himself, or did that maybe come from the other side of the family? I've always wondered about that.
No, she doesn't. She's a really nice lady.
Oh, I imagine she is.
Yeah, no, she's not.
you know, one of the things that I really appreciate. Sorry about talking over you. I know we're working on a Google Voice line here and recording this, so unfortunately that happens a little bit. But I did want to say, you know, it's pretty cool with Richard Sherman's mom, Beverly Sherman. You know, she interacts with fans on Facebook, and I've had a couple interactions with her just because, you know, saying thanks to her for their appreciation they've shown toward the military folks in the past year. You know, the softball game that Richard Sherman held, proceeds went to help veterans. And, you know, I've seen him at games, you know, going over just to shake hands with soldiers that are, you know, down in the first row or on the sidelines. And it's really great how that family supports the military.
Yeah. Well, not this year, but last year at the banquet, I helped set it up and stuff, and I put the name tags out for the people, and I had Richard Sherman sat at my table. So that was kind of nice a couple years ago. It was kind of before he was really that, you know, as popular as he got.
It wasn't until probably the New England game where, you know, he got in the Brady's face after the game, and, you know, people really started talking about Sherman.
Well, the year before, though, I could really see his improvement. He got into a few games, and I had talked to him at another event where he was supporting the troops in SeaTac. There was an event, and he was there, and I talked to him for a minute, and I, you know, just said, you know, just keep on going, because he was just, you know, he wasn't getting a lot of playing time, but I could see that he was really good. So, but he's a good guy. So,
yeah, definitely. And so for people who are interested in joining a Seahawkers chapter, what would you tell them? Where should they go to do that?
Yeah, seahawkers.org. And, you know, try to pick the closest location you can to join. You can, a lot of chapters have the PayPal set up. And it's $15 for an individual and $25 for a family of four. And military is free. So sign up online or download a, you know, a form from there and mail it in, or contact by email one of the presidents. You should have email addresses on there.
All right, and we talked a little bit about Richard Sherman. Any other players that you plan on watching this preseason? Anybody particularly interesting to you?
I think, you know, we're probably not going to see a lot of the starters. So I think you mentioned earlier about the quarterback. So that could be interesting to see how the backups go. You know, how that turns out.
Do you have a horse in that race, Bruce? Like, me personally, I'm kind of pulling for T-Jack. I like the way that he had experience with the team before, the way that he ran the offense. Well, not that I'm anti-Brady Quinn, but I just feel like his presence in the locker room is a good one. I'd like to see him stick around.
Yes, I think so, too. You know, and he was playing hurt with a torn pec, and, you know, he really – fought through the last year he was with us, and I think if he can just get rid of the ball instead of throwing it into deep, getting to some double man coverage on third down, I think he'll do a lot better. It seemed like that was, he was just trying too hard, and, you know, it just wasn't working a lot of times, but I think he'll do better now.
All right, and last thing before we go, Bruce, I want to get expectations for the season. Do you got a prediction, or is there a record that you've got in mind?
Well, they let's see. You know, I think what I said last year was 12-4. What they do, 11-5. So I guess 12-4 again. I mean, it was year of the 12 last year. I mean, what do you call it, the year of the 13 this year? I don't know. 12 wins is good. 12 wins is good, I think. What do you guys think?
I think we would all take 12 wins, you know.
Oh, I don't know about you guys. I'm going undefeated. Like, I don't think we're losing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Adam doesn't mess around.
I like it. I'll take that. 17,
all right,
19 in a row. Not.
Well, I wanted to thank you for being on our first official Seahawkers podcast. I want to thank you for, you know, giving the thumbs up to, you know, promote the Seahawkers through our podcast. And all the appreciation for what you do as the president of the Seahawkers, all the great events that you've set up and helped produce with the team over the off season, and look forward to the kickoff party there the day before the Niners game.
Oh yeah, that should be good. And so where can I hear the podcast at? Do you have
We'll have it posted online. I'll shoot you an email, and hopefully we can get it out to all our Seahawkers members out there, and have a website set up to where folks can go to download it, either also through iTunes or some of the other places where folks get their podcasts regularly.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right. Well, thanks. We will see you at the game.
Go Hawks.
Note to the opposition, buckle up. You're about to take a ride on the 12 train. For the next 3 hours, the mighty roar of the 12 will induce nausea, confusion, and chaos, resulting in a plethora of false starts. I'd say enjoy the ride, but obviously you will not. The 12 train is now leaving the station.
Welcome back to the Seahawkers podcast. That was another track from the 12 train. If you want to download any of the bumps that you've heard on our show today, check out reverbnation.com/Weehawk. And you can also follow Weehawk at Weehawk12 on Twitter. So, let them know if you heard those songs here on our podcast. You may have heard them other places as well if you're one of our diehard Seahawks fans out there. So check it out, reverbnation.com/Weehawk. Download those tracks.
Oh, you bet. The stuff's been sweet. I've really enjoyed it, and we just want to thank him again for allowing us to use that on the pod here.
So getting into the second half of our podcast here, and thanks again to the interview with Bruce for coming on our show. The second half, we want to talk about our NFC worst. Talk about Harbaugh's epic offseason. Oh, man, he had an offseason for... fit for a Super Bowl loser.
Oh, it was better than Ferris Bueller's day off. Like he got to do a lot of things.
Yeah, exactly. And then we want to finish off with who's better at life than Skip Bayless. So let's get into it. Let's talk about our NFC worst. And we talked about it a little bit when we teased it in the opener, but talk a little bit about Riley Cooper. And I know folks are probably a little bit... They've probably been Riley Coopered out with how much he's been in the media over these last couple of days. But, I really haven't seen a whole lot of people talking about the LeSean McCoy comments in relation to Riley Cooper. And that's where we want to go with this.
Oh, you bet. I mean, LeSean McCoy comes out and says that he's lost respect for Riley Cooper. And, as you pointed out to me a little bit earlier, Brandon, that's a little bit of... the pot calling the kettle black there. Like, I don't quite understand how he can get on his high horse there. Fill us in a little bit on what Shady was doing earlier.
Yeah, well, go back to January, and granted, it's been a few months in the media cycle, so people may not remember, but, LeSean McCoy, he had a little bit of something to apologize for, and so maybe he's forgetting about it a little bit, but, he was on vacation, actually on vocation, as he tweeted.
Whatever that is.
Yeah, well, and so when his ex-girlfriend saw the vocation tweet, she got in a little bit of an argument with him, and
that's why I don't let any of my ex-girlfriends follow me on Twitter, man.
Yeah,
that's
well,
a bad idea.
It is a bad idea, and a really bad idea for Shady, especially the way he tweets, because he got into it a little bit, and it ended with him saying, calling out to his Twitter followers to tell his ex-girlfriend to, quote, get a job and stop begging for child support money. She a bum. needs me to live, sad. And so, you know, maybe we and I, do we want to really bring it up for LaShawn McCoy? Do we need to remind him what child support actually is?
You know, he might be confused on the whole deal there, you know, but the first thing that I do when I have a beef with one of my ex-girlfriends is I get on Twitter and get all my Twitter followers to let her know what my beef with her is.
Right.
Yeah. Because that's the best way to do that. I mean, communicating directly, that never works.
No, you don't want to actually call her on the phone.
No, that's crazy talk.
Right.
But, you know, this also shows, you know, how easy it is for an athlete to get in trouble with social media these days.
Well, yeah. You see it with Riley Cooper. Everybody has a camera phone and everybody is pointing it at a celebrity or NFLer.
Oh, absolutely. Just in hopes to end up, you know, with their video on TMZ or to be a giant YouTube hit or whatever, you know?
Right. And all these athletes, they want to be on Twitter. It's good for them to be on Twitter, to interact with fans. We don't want to lose that, but there has to be an understanding of the filter that they have to put on themselves when they go on Twitter.
Right, right. So, you know, Riley Cooper, he obviously dipped right into the LaShawn McCoy playbook when it came to apologizing for his social media gaffe. You know, you repent fast, you go from there. And that's basically been the playbook for this, you know, since social media has kind of manifested itself. And so...
Yeah, the irony is that their apologies are almost... word for word, at least in how they went about apologizing. Well, in some ways, McCoy put out a statement, which I'm never a big fan of. I'm more of a fan of the how Riley Cooper did it. He got out in front of the media. He took questions. It wasn't just a statement, and this is all I'm going to say. He actually answered questions. But
then why do you hire a publicist then at that point? I mean,
you need someone to craft a good statement. You know, you're getting into
Twitter.
Yeah,
when's the last time an athlete has actually written the statement that's been released?
Yeah, probably not. And that's why it's good for them to get out on camera, agreed, answer the questions, and don't just hide behind the release statement. But, you know, it was interesting looking at the two statements. You know, McCoy said that he used bad judgment and just how immature and unprofessional it was for him to encourage others to join in. And, you know, And he said essentially what Riley Cooper said was that this isn't how he wanted himself to be portrayed, and not how not the type of person that he is. And, you know,
so maybe you shouldn't just, like, I don't know, not portray yourself that way by saying
that would,
like,
be the easy thing.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm Captain Obvious here, but that's kind of the way that I'd go about it.
Yeah, well, and the thing is both these guys, both young guys, something to learn from. I think this should be the opportunity for the two of them to come together. They have kind of this shared experience. And rather than McCoy come out and say that he's lost respect for a teammate, you know, he could actually support his teammate a lot like Michael Vick did. And they have that shared experience of, okay, I said something that I shouldn't have.
Right.
This isn't the type of person I am. At least that's not how it appears from some of his other teammates. Other
right.
teammates are obviously saying, you know, that they don't want to play with Riley Cooper and they want him off the team. But if they took this opportunity to come together and you know, keep the team together,
sure,
rally behind a teammate, I think it would be best for the team.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it eliminates a distraction. But, you know, ask yourself this: how happy are you that you have guys on your team like a Russell Wilson who isn't going to put his foot directly in his mouth and say something terrible like this, or even a Richard Sherman who's running his mouth totally all the time, but at least it's calculated. You know, he knows what he's saying before he says it, and he's doing it for a reason. And he's never going to say anything that is, you know, on the level of like a racial slur or calling out his baby mama for, you know, begging for child support. You know, it's just going to be something funny, you know, like, you mad, bro?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one thing that, you know, when I look at this, I'm real happy we have the guys we do on the Seahawks, man.
You know, it is good, and you would hope that none of the Seahawks players have something in them like either of these guys. But at the same time, I think we have the locker room that would rally around a player if he did make a mistake.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely some forgiveness there. You know, I really do feel like that they view themselves as family, for sure. And they would definitely let something like this go. But, yeah, Riley Cooper, oops.
And so moving along to other things that the Seahawks team can rally around and even Seahawks fans is just how much we dislike Jim Harbaugh.
Oh, yeah. My hatred for Jim Harbaugh is seething at every given moment. Like, I can't stand this guy. He's instead of Captain Comeback, they should have called him Captain Hypocrite. This is ridiculous. You know, he comes out and he says, I definitely noticed all the PED used by the Seattle Seahawks. Yet they try to make the trade for the cornerback Wright from Tampa Bay,
right,
who had just gotten, you know, dinged for something similar. Didn't they have a linebacker test positive or something like that here just
recently? There's enough of that going on that, you know, him noticing the Seahawks PED suspensions, it's ridiculous for him to even bring that up. And as soon as I saw that, it's like, you know, you can't say that there's nobody in the 49ers locker room that's doing the same thing.
You can't say that there's nobody on any team in the NFL that's not doing the same thing. I mean, the HGH use has to be rampant in the NFL. I mean, you just look at these guys. They're gigantic. I mean, that can't be – every one of those guys can't be natural.
No. And so, you know, for him to come out with a statement like that, but, you know, the statement was probably one of the least things that I had a problem with Harbaugh over this offseason.
Right. Yeah.
You know, the top one probably, well, I think it had to be showing up on Judge Judy.
What the heck was Harbaugh doing on Judge Judy?
This is how you choose to celebrate your off season is to go and sit on us and watch Judge Judy.
Oh, so he was watching Judge Judy. So he wasn't like a participant.
No, he was in the audience.
Right, like, right. But he wasn't arguing with his neighbor about where their fence line was
No.
Okay.
But, you know, he said that the reason why he did it was because he said, if you lie in Judge Judy's courtroom, it's over. So he was taking away things from the experience of watching Judge Judy do her work in the courtroom, and that once people lied to Judge Judy, that was when they lost the, you know, they were on their way to losing the case.
Right.
And so he had that as a takeaway. For, you know, interviewing players, I guess.
Oh, well, I don't know about
combine.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but when I deal with personnel as a head coach, I take my tips from a reality TV judge.
Well, yeah.
Because, I mean, that's clearly where you're going to get the best information and best role models for how to deal with those situations.
Yeah,
because when you lie to Jim Harbaugh now, it's over.
It's over. Yeah. And there's no way he would have got that experience by just sitting on his couch and watching it. He had to be there in the audience.
Look, he had to be there just to make sure that Judge Judy was still alive and that wasn't just a puppet like that's up there. Like, I didn't even know that show was still on. So, well, you know, good for you know, Captain Hypocrite there. He's, you know, going out there and learning life lessons from reality TV judges.
Yeah. And then the thing that blew me away the most, you know, it could have been Judge Judy, but it was actually taking his baseball glove to an A's game. You know, not just going to an A's game, putting on the hat, sitting in the stands. He brought his glove, like, you know, like
like a 7-year-old. Yeah. No, barehand that, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't be bringing your glove there. Like,
and as an adult to go and expect to catch a foul ball, I mean, you've been to enough baseball games, right?
Yeah.
That you don't, as an adult, you don't bring your glove.
No, you don't bring your glove. I don't know. Maybe he was just trying to protect his throwing hand. Maybe it's an old habit that died hard. I don't know. Like, that's crazy.
I didn't think of that. That's a possibility.
That's the only strategical advantage I could see to that. But, you know, then again, you would think that, you know, his glove would be, you know, left-handed, and, you know, he's a right-handed quarterback, so.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, I didn't pay that much attention to which glove hand.
Really?
No.
It's not a burning desire question for you?
No, I just saw the picture of Harbaugh with a glove. You know, a lot of people had a harder time with his cap choice and the fact that he was seen wearing a Giants cap not too long ago and then was wearing an A's cap shortly after, and they couldn't quite get around the fact that, you know, being in the Bay Area, you had to be a fan of one team or the other.
Right, right. Well, I will give him credit on this. At least he wore the cap of a team that is not the same sport in which he is a coach of.
Oh, like his quarterback?
Like his quarterback, exactly. So Colin Kaepernick, I mean, most of you have probably heard by now, gets a picture taken of him on and put up on Instagram of him down in Miami with his lid that matches his underwear that's sticking out of his shorts.
Gotta go with the matching lid to the underwear.
Oh, yeah, it's all about swag. It's all about swag. And so he was wearing a Miami Dolphins hat. And you know, Harbaugh comes out, it's not a big deal, you know, blah, 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 same lip service. Yet this is the same guy that seemed to have freaked out about a certain somebody wearing a different team's clothing to an interview at one point.
Yeah, back in 2000, you know, he seemed to have a big problem back when Harbaugh was actually playing for the Chargers. Yeah, the San Diego Union Tribune reporter, Jim Trotter, he showed up on the at a Chargers practice wearing a 49ers sweatshirt.
How dare he?
How dare he? And Harbaugh said it was, quote, pathetic that Trotter would wear that shirt. And then he refused to answer questions.
Right.
So, well, yeah, crybaby back then, still to this day, you know, hasn't changed.
No.
But had a this much of a problem with a reporter and then blows off this Kaepernick thing completely.
Yeah, so like it's no big deal.
I don't really buy that he didn't have a problem with Kaepernick. I can see where he's going. He doesn't want to come out in the media and make a big deal of it. But I think secretly... or he had something to say to Kaepernick.
I'm actually surprised that he didn't want to come out in the media and say something about it, because I firmly believe that Jim Harbaugh is Rex Ryan West. You know, he's following the exact same path that Rex Ryan did, some early success in their coaching careers. Obviously, Harbaugh got one game further than Rex Ryan did, only to the AFC Championship game did Rex Ryan get. But, you know, gregarious, you know, loud, look at me on the sidelines, you know, all these antics. And that kind of coaching style where you're over the top all the time, it wears and it grows old on a team. And look at, what was it, year three that Rex, when the Jets, you know, and the wheels on the bus fell off of that whole mm-hmm. thing. I think you're going to see the same thing with the 49ers with this, you know, with old Rex Ryan West. So
I think that personality will wear just as it wears on Seahawks fans. I think it'll start to wear, you know, especially it will accelerate if the 49ers aren't winning.
Oh, yeah. I had read a short story that John Harbaugh was quoted in, and he was talking about growing up with Jim and how, you know, with his dad being a coach, that they moved a lot, and they moved about every 2 years. And he said that was actually perfect for Jim, because one day he came up to his dad, you know, in high school and said, oh, we're moving? Oh, that's great. I actually just ran out of friends.
That's not surprising at all.
No, not at all. So, yeah. I think he'll burn through his welcome here with the Niners Nation at some point.
Well, I think we probably will have enough over the coming months to make a Harbaugh segment, a recurring segment
hating
on the
Harbaugh
show. Yeah, I think we could do that.
I'm fully endorse this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have enough hate to make that happen. So
I think, and there's plenty of stuff to bring up from the past, but I think he'll be a wealth of, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, very good. So that brings us all the way back around to who's better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yes. Who is better at life than Skip Bayless? And a phrase coined by Richard Sherman, who absolutely annihilated Skip Bayless.
Undressed him.
Yes. And said to Bayless on the show, I am better at life than you. And really,
I think that's true.
Yeah.
He kind of backs that up. I mean, Stanford graduate, best... best guy at the position, you know, in best at his profession, you know, in the league. And Skip Bayless can't say that.
No, I don't think he could even come close.
No. I mean, he would try. I mean, he would say a lot of things that are wrong in the meantime. But,
well, I think the reason why Skip Bayless is so popular is because he says things that are wrong so frequently. And we've
with
just,
authority.
With authority. And we've just become so accustomed to seeing that name in the headlines. And we go, oh, what did Skip say this time that was
sure,
dumb?
It's absurd. Yeah. Like, so, he thinks the Seahawks are going to regress this year.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But you know what? I am doing my part. I am doing my part in avoiding headlines associated with Skip Bayless. So, yeah. You know, maybe we can rally around that. And
definitely.
And that's the only way that he's going to be off the air is by people
ignoring,
not paying attention to him.
Yeah. Yeah, just like that annoying younger sister. Like, you just ignored her, and then eventually she would shut up. So
yeah.
That's basically what you do with Skip Bayless.
So to rally around that.
Right. We're talking about who's better in life.
We are talking about who's better.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with my pick for this week, and I'm going to go with a fellow Stanford grad, Doug Baldwin.
Oh, Dougie Fresh. Okay.
Dougie Fresh. You know, we've enjoyed his YouTube videos as well as Mike Robb's in this offseason.
The Fresh Files are very fresh.
Very fresh and very filed. And although I think he would admit maybe not regularly filed, but you know, frequent enough in the off season that we can enjoy them. But
yeah,
you know, that's not the reason why I give him the Better at Life award for this show. You know, he's done a lot of great things for the community in this off season, and I think one of the things we don't see enough of are when you know, when these athletes, they go out and they do a lot of nice things in the community. We talked a little bit about some of the things that Richard Sherman did in our conversation with Bruce. And so many Seahawks are like that. I could have picked just about any other member on the Seahawks.
Sure.
But, you know, being a member of the military Seahawkers and watching what Doug Baldwin's done in the offseason, he went and he stopped by and visited a wounded warrior.
Nice.
They actually... hung out with him for the afternoon, you know, but he's done a lot of other things, you know, with the 12 tour, done things with Salvation Army, Bellevue Boys and Girls Club, and some other, you know, skills camps, you know, like a lot of the athletes do. And, you know, I think it's worth noting that, he's really done a lot this offseason for the community. And for someone who isn't from...
Right, that's what I was just going to say, actually. Yeah, you know, being all the way from Florida, Pensacola, Florida, and actually, you know, take an active interest in the community in which he plays. And, you know, a lot of players don't do that. You know, when the offseason rolls around, they're out of here. They're, you know, they're heading back home. And, you know, not that I blame them, but it's refreshing to see, all puns intended, Dougie Fresh, you know, putting
coming
in his
back.
Time with the people of Seattle.
Yep, and, giving back to the community. And like I was saying, you go down the list. I mean, Russell Wilson had a passing academy. Marshawn Lynch had a charity weekend in the Bay Area. So he goes back home to Oakland and supports the community there, which is great. Earl Thomas goes back home and youth camp in his home state of Texas there. Cam Chancellor going back to Virginia and inviting folks to come to a Memorial Day cookout. And, and I know we had some military folks that were really interested in, and I think dropped in on that. So,
right on.
You know, it's really cool that they take the time in the off season. So give props to Dougie Fresh.
Yeah.
Better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
And so also I'll give Adam the chance to pick one as well.
Yeah, I do have you know, somebody who's better at life than Skip Bayless. Is, like I said, an easy distinction, but not a Seahawk, but Chris Carter. I listened to his Hall of Fame speech from this week, this past weekend. One of the more sincere Hall of Fame speeches that you'll ever see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he actually made an apology to, you know, Ohio State fans for missing his senior season because he signed with an agent early.
Mm-hmm.
You know, apologized for, you know, kind of being a little out of control when he first came in the league, especially with his drinking. You know, just the way that he thanked his family and people in his life that were instrumental in getting him to that point, including his high school coach, you know, had some amazing things to say about that. But it wasn't just read from a piece of paper. I mean, it came from, you know, a very, very genuine place, and you could tell that. And you don't always get that from professional athletes. And one speech that, you know, stands in stark contrast to that, to me, was Michael Jordan's Hall of Fame speech.
I was just going to say Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, it was the complete antithesis of that. Not that I didn't enjoy it, but, you know, Chris Carter...
You enjoy it in different ways.
Yeah, but Chris Carter's Hall of Fame speech, amazing, a quality, quality man.
Well-deserved to be in the Hall of Fame.
Well-deserved and overdue. One of the best receivers of all time, without question.
Absolutely.
So,
you know, I'm surprised he's not one of the people that, one of the players that came to the Seahawks to end his career. You know, we had Jerry Rice, you know, end his Hall of Fame career in Seattle.
Yep.
Terrell Owens,
right.
I think we can agree he'll be a future Hall of Famer. You know,
and his career is over.
His career is over, although, you know, he still wants to come back.
I know what he wants to. Yeah.
John Randall, you know, another Hall of Famer, ended his career in Seattle.
Yeah.
You know, Franco Harris.
Warren Moon.
I mean, yeah. we got all these great people. You know, it would have been good to have Chris Carter come in and end his career with Seattle. You know, to join that line of great Seahawks Hall of Famers.
Absolutely. We'll snag all your good guys at the last 2 years of their career, and they'll be our Hall of Famer. I like that.
I definitely include all those players as Seahawks members of the Seahawks Hall of Fame.
Exactly. So Chris Carter, that's my candidate for better at life than Skip Bayless.
All right. Well, I think that wraps up our Seahawkers podcast, our inaugural podcast for the and we'll probably be doing this at about once a month and checking in quarterly, see how the Seahawks are doing and checking in with different clubs of the Seahawkers clubs and let you guys know a little bit about what each one of them's about, some of these different ones across the country. Of course, I belong to the military Seahawkers, and as Bruce mentioned, free to join for all military. You'll want to go to www.militaryseahawkers.com, and you can sign up there. Free to join for all military members and veterans. So hope to have you there.
You betcha. Just want to thank everybody for listening again for the inaugural podcast. This was a lot of fun. Can't wait to do it again. And that said, I think there's really only one other thing to say here.
Yep. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.